Hi, everyone. Earlier this year, Elon Musk put out a $100 million prize for innovation in, quote, carbon-negative solutions, or pulling CO2 straight out of the air. But BNEF carbon capture analyst David Madrid says Musk is missing the point, that what is needed for direct air capture is scale, not new technologies. The technologies for pulling CO2 straight out of the air are largely proven, but need larger demonstration projects to start to bring down the cost of capture, which right now is estimated at an eye-watering $600 per ton CO2. This week on the show, David steps in to tell us about direct air capture and how it works, the economics and how they compare to capturing CO2 from point sources like power plants and industrial facilities, and the $300 billion already going into a handful of demonstration projects. Our discussion is based on a report titled Material Tech Highlight, Direct Air Capture. BNEF users can get this report on BNEF.com, the BNEF mobile app, and the Bloomberg terminal. As a reminder, BNEF does not provide investment or strategy advice, and you can hear the full disclaimer at the end of the show. I'm Mark Taylor, and you're listening to Switched On, the BNEF podcast. David, welcome.
Thank you.
Can you just start us off really basic and tell us what direct air capture is?
So direct air capture is a conventional carbon capture technology, but instead of capturing the carbon from a point source, such as a natural gas processing plant or a power plant, it captures the CO2 from the atmosphere. So it's basically a removal technology.
So basically, it's a, can I think of it as a mechanical tree?
It is. It is actually a mechanical tree, but using more an industrial approach. So yeah, similar to a tree removal technology with the main goal of taking CO2 out of the atmosphere.
Okay, cool. So can you tell us what it looks like? Is it the size of a tree or is it the size of a refrigerator? Is it the size of a house? What are we talking here?
Yeah, so the size really depends on how much CO2 we are capturing per year. But actually, we estimate that a conventional direct air capture plan for capturing 1 million tons of CO2 per year, that would require around 2 square kilometers maximum. When we compare that to a forestation, which requires around 800 square kilometers, that's conventional forestation. And also bioenergy with CCS requires around 300. So we can see that direct air capture is much lower land requirement. So there we are pretty much in a better position compared to other removal technologies.
Okay, so the idea is that I do not want to deride, you know, planting trees, but like you can get more CO2 sucked out of the atmosphere per unit of area than you could with a tree. Is that the idea?
Absolutely, absolutely. Much more. For a given land, you can capture much more CO2 with a direct air capture plant than following other removal technologies, such as we said, afforestation or bioenergy with CCS.
Okay. So, I mean, I think I know the answer to this, but like, can you tell us why this is popular? I mean, just for those who haven't heard of it, maybe it's getting a lot of attention right now in the news and as an option for, well, reducing CO2. And I guess that's the answer. Is there anything else that comes to mind?
It's popular mainly because companies are looking for removal technologies, right? So it is pretty much known that we will need some kind of removal technologies in the future to actually get to 1.5. So companies are looking to direct air capture in order to remove their emissions. And also we are in a point in where companies such as Microsoft not only want to offset their current emissions, but also the tons of CO2 that they emitted in the past. So you can only do that through removal technologies. And there is where direct air capture can also play a big role. And also it is true that there are other industries that are really hard to decarbonize, such as cement or steel. And there we will need some kind of removal technologies to offset the last remaining emissions that we will have in the future.
Because some of the CO2 emission, well, a lot of the CO2 emissions from cement production is actually process emissions that comes from the rock itself, right?
Exactly.
Okay, cool. Just to clarify, you know, can you just clarify for people 1.5 degrees?
In order to get to a world in where the warming gets to 1.5 and not warmer, it is pretty sure and that we will need some kind of removal technology. So we'll need trees, afforestation, bioenergy with CCS, mineralization, and also direct air capture in order to take out emissions that are already in the atmosphere. So we need to take out tons of CO2 from the atmosphere because carbon dioxide is the main greenhouse gas that causes global warming.
So now that we've established that, you know, it can be a really great, you know, way to pull CO2 out of the air. Can you tell us a bit about how it does that? How does it pull CO2 out of the air?
Direct air capture is pretty much normal CCUS plan, but instead of capturing CO2 from a point source, it takes out from the atmosphere, right? So there are main differences there, such as, for example, in a direct air capture plant, we need these super large contactor arrays with fans that draw CO2 into the collectors, right? And there is where all the chemical process happens. But just for us to understand, when we talk about the direct air capture plant, it's pretty much similar to a conventional CCUS facility that is located in a power plant, for example. And this technology has been around for decades, right? But the main difference is the cost. So the cost in a point source is much lower than taking CO2 out of the atmosphere. And that is basically because the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere is much lower, 400 parts per million, when we compare that to point sources where the concentration is super high. It depends on the point source, of course, but then if we get to the low-hanging fruit, fertilizer plants, ethanol plants, there the cost of capture is pretty much very cheap compared to current cost of direct air capture that we estimate to be around $600 per ton. But again, there are different technologies there, and the purpose that they are used for is also different. We need to deploy conventional CCUS plants in those assets that we really want to decarbonize, and then use direct air capture for these really hard to decarbonize industries and to offset the last remaining emissions. Taking advantage of high cost but super high modularity, easy to deploy technology.
But how does it work? Like, so specifically, can you tell us about, in the note that you wrote, there are basically two main methods of capturing CO2. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. That's correct.
Can you describe those?
There are two different technologies that are used nowadays. One that is absorption and the other that is adsorption. That is a bit difficult to pronounce, but the main difference in these technologies is how the chemistry works there. So absorption is a volume phenomenon, while adsorption is a surface phenomenon. So in absorption, the CO2 gets dissolved in the solvent, while in adsorption, being the CO2 attached in the surface, we need more surface for the same volume of CO2 to get captured at the end.
Okay, so let's break that down really quick. So adsorption, solid sponge, let's think of it.
Correct.
And absorption, dissolve liquid. Does that work?
Yeah, that's how it works.
Okay, cool. And so those are two main methods of doing it. So can you describe some of the advantages and disadvantages of each type of technology?
The main difference is the temperature that the plant needs in order to regenerate the solvent. So when we talk about liquid solvents, the temperature that is needed is around 900 degrees Celsius. And on the other hand, for solid adsorption, the temperature that is needed is around 100 degrees Celsius. So the difference there is much lower. And that's why in a liquid solvent plant, the temperature much higher, we also need much higher thermal energy to regenerate the solvent.
Okay, so just to clarify, regenerate the solvent means you fill up the filter or the sorbent, and then you need to get the CO2 out so you can use the filter or the sponge or the liquid again, right? To me, it sounds like a no-brainer. What am I missing? That you have the 900 C regeneration temperature. That sounds like a deal breaker to me. And you would go with the one that has a lower temperature. Why is there a choice? Like, what makes the liquid sorbent good?
That's a really good point. And there are many things that affect the overall cost. But when we compare solid absorption to liquid absorption, it's not only the temperature that makes a difference, but also the materials that we are using and the sorbent that is being used. So the sorbent is a big part of the cost. And of course, companies that are working with solvents use different type of sorbents, and companies that are working in adsorption also use different types of materials and sorbents. So there is a key difference there in the materials that are used to power and to capture the CO2 at the end.
Forgive me for my terminology, but I keep coming back to the sponge and the liquid, right? But so you could say that the sponge is more expensive to produce and consume, I guess, and the liquid is cheaper, but the regeneration is more expensive. Is that right?
Exactly. That's the process we are seeing companies doing. And that's what the industry is doing at the moment. It also, there is a lot of demonstration in order to try to reduce the total cost, the industry's in early stage. So it needs to get to economies of scale, get a specialized supply chain, demonstrate new sorbents. But you're right. That's the main technology differences.
Okay. I think we got it roughly now. Can you tell us what the costs are. You know, can you give us a ballpark estimate of how expensive this stuff is to do?
Just to give a starting point, current cost of capture are around $600 per ton of CO2. So very, very expensive when we compare that to other removal technologies. But then again, as we were saying, the technologies in super early stages, companies are finalizing their pilot plans and trying to scale their technology. So the cost is 600 now, but it can decline and it will decline as technology scales, more plants are commissioned and built, economies of scale are realized, industries get specialized supply chains, and also these companies learn from operating these facilities, right? So they can reduce the cost of operating and the OPEX overall will be reduced. And with that, the industry believes that we can get to a point of around $250 per ton of CO2 captured by 2030, and then around $100 per ton of CO2 by 2050, right? So current studies that are released by the companies working in direct air capture estimate that in end of a kind cost, we could get to points around $100 per ton of CO2 captured.
Man, okay, this is fascinating. So we're gonna go on a journey here of talking about this cost and what it actually means. So in the US, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's a tax credit, I believe, called 45Q, where a company can get a tax credit for injecting CO2 into the ground of, what is it now, $45 a ton, I want to say?
You actually get 50 if you start 50? It, and 35 if you use it for enhanced recovery.
Okay, cool. So we're hearing that that is, you know, at least bordering on commercially viable at this point. Is that right?
That's correct. So point source, if you get to a point where the cost of capture is lower than 50, then yeah, you can make a business case out of it.
Okay, so we're at $600 a ton now, $300 a ton in 10 years, 8 years, and then the end of a kind at 100. Okay, so even that doesn't quite compete with what you're telling me right now for point source capture. But what I would take from that is that this is, you know, personal opinion, I guess, that it just doesn't matter, right? Because my assumption here is that direct air capture will mostly be important for companies that want to offset emissions. And this might be the only option they have to do it. I don't know. Is that right?
That's right. 100%. Just when comparing a conventional CCUS plan, if we are actually capturing 90% of the CO2 that is released in this point source plants, it's a power plant, for example, there is the other 10%. These 10% of emissions also need to be offset at some point, right? So when we deploy all the technologies, there will be emissions that will need to be removed, and that's where direct air capture can play a role. And also, you are absolutely right. When we compare cost of point source to direct air capture, it is true that direct air capture is much more expensive, but we are seeing pathways where direct air capture can be viable for companies to follow instead of paying the taxes, super high carbon taxes expected, for example, in Canada or Norway.
Cool. Okay, so it sounds like an option of several over time. And it sounds like it also could be kind of like equated to the last mile for deliveries, right? Like your last ton of CO2 to squeeze out in your offsets.
Exactly.
So how much is this actually being used? We know it's early stage, but just how early stage right now? How many tons of CO2 are currently being removed from the atmosphere via direct air capture?
Estimates say that a bit more than 6,000 tons of CO2 can be captured per year using direct air capture facilities already commissioned. So that's super low. That's very early stage. But we are seeing how the industry is making progress. Companies are expected to commission larger scale plants. So we are really seeing a change there. For example, there will be a plan that will be commissioned this year that will have a capacity of 4,000 tons of CO2, right? So if we compare that to the overall deployed capacity, that's already a significant advancement. So there is significant progress there, but it is true that we are in early stages of development of the technologies. Pilot plants have been built and larger scale plants are planned to be built in the near future.
Okay. So just to recap, super early stage, super expensive, but could play a really important role in taking CO2 out of the air in the future. When we come back, we're going to talk about those pilot projects, what's being done, who are the main players, and how they're hoping to scale. Stay with us. So let's talk about who's doing what. Can you tell us who the main players are in direct air capture?
There are mainly three big players in the direct haircut space, and taking all their fundings together, to put that into perspective, they have raised more than 300 million, right? And these three main players are first Carbon Engineering, second Climeworks, and third Global Thermostat.
Are they all US companies?
Global Thermostat is a US company. Carbon Engineering is from Canada, and Climeworks is actually a Swiss company.
And what are they doing? So what technologies have they chosen? What is their status report?
So Carbon Engineering is following the liquid absorption technology that we were talking about before, and Climeworks and Global Thermostat, the solid absorption pathway. And they also have pretty much different plans to scale their technology. To put that into a current view of the industry, Climeworks is the company that will commission the 4,000 tons per year facility this year. But then Carbon Engineering plans to commission a 1 million ton per year facility by 2024. That's 250 times larger than the current largest DAC facility that will be commissioned by Climeworks. So there is massive progress in the industry there.
Skeptical. So I don't know. For those listening, like, I think I've mentioned this several times before, but I used to be a CCS, or carbon capture and storage analyst, 10 years ago. And there was all these announcements about projects, you know, big projects that were coming online, and you know, big pilots as well. And, you know, company would say, we're going to build three of these, we're going to build four of these. And I would always just say, like, well, show me one. And that resulted in us putting together this thing we called the race to first, you know, who was going to actually build the first commercial scale or large scale CCS project. And we would track in detail the progress of each project. So can you tell me, you know, there's a big difference between a company saying they're going to get a pilot project or a commercial scale demo done and actually doing it. So can you tell us about how far along they are, or is that known or not?
Yeah. So for example, for the facility that Climeworks will build this year, is pretty much in super advanced stage. So
All right. Cool.
Almost finished in Iceland. So that's looking great. Of course, looking at 2024, which is the year when Carbon Engineering expects to commission their 1 million ton per year facility, it's more uncertain there. But it is true that these companies are backed by super large oil corporations. For example, Oxy is partnering with Carbon Engineering, right? Exxon is going with Global Thermostat. So there is really backed there. And now direct air capture looks like a main part of decarbonization solutions for large oil corporations.
Okay, let's come back to that. But let's talk about the pilots really quick. And fine, I'm sold. It sounds promising. So the one clear question in my mind is okay, so why Iceland, right, for a demo for direct air capture?
The good thing about the facility that Climeworks is building in Iceland is that it's taking advantage of this located next to a geothermal power plant. So basically, it's taking the heat and electricity produced by the geothermal plant to power the process. So all the energy requirements are coming from the geothermal power plant. Plus, Climeworks is also partnering with Carbfix, which is a company that mineralizes the CO2. So in this facility, the CO2 is basically mineralized and stored in the long term. So there is two advantages there. The first, that the facility is located to a geothermal power plant. And the second is that the CO2 is stored through mineralization.
Okay, I'm just going to nerd out for a second. That's really cool. So like, everybody listening, I'm sorry. I used to be a geothermal analyst too, 10 years ago. And I've been to this plant, the Hellasheide plant in Iceland. And if anybody's interested, they have a really cool visitor center. You can go check it out, you know, and have a look. But what's really cool is that this project, kind of a I don't know if it's a dark secret, but whatever. A thing about geothermal is that there's CO2 in the ground. And sometimes when you pull up the water, well, CO2 is going to come out too. And so one of the justifications, I think, for this plant was that it can help capture some of the CO2 that's emitted by the geothermal activity or the geothermal production, and therefore making this plant even more environmentally friendly, which is really cool. And Iceland has a unique, well, unique chemistry that can fix the CO2 in the rocks below, unlike, you know, other locations where it would just be stored. So it'll instantly mineralize, and it's really just a pretty cool thing. I question the ability to scale this out much further in Iceland, you know, it being so small, but it's a super interesting choice for a pilot project.
It is. Climeworks expect to scale this up to 40,000 tons per year.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's really cool. And that seems to be the challenge, right? So From your note, you said that the technology is basically proven, but the challenge is scaling it up. Is that right? And getting the cost down. Can you talk about what companies are doing to try to jump this hurdle of scale up?
On companies that are following different approaches, right? So for example, Climeworks is the company that has commissioned more plants, but they are all super small scale. But then taking advantage of DAX modularity, Climeworks is following different paths there. So for example, they are doing a project in Norway to produce liquid fuels. So taking the CO2 that has been captured and partnering with Sunfire and others, they are planning to produce liquid fuels. Then they are building the facility in Iceland, which is actually storing through mineralization the CO2 that has been captured. Then moving on to Global Thermostat, they are providing the CO2 for carbonated rings. And then moving on to Carbon Engineering. Moving on to Carbon Engineering, what Carbon Engineering is doing at the moment is partnering with Oxy to provide them with CO2 that will be used for enhanced recovery operations. So there are really different approaches there, all of them taking advantage of the modularity that direct air capture provides.
So I was thinking about this morning, right? That when you talked about the enhanced oil recovery, you know, you're capturing CO2 to pull up more oil. That sounds like a kind of a paradox, I guess. And then I think in the note, you also mentioned that to get the heat required to regenerate the liquid sorbent, they were burning natural gas, right? To me, the comparison that I made in my head was that, okay, that's like getting an electric vehicle, but charging it with a diesel generator in your back garden. So it's kind of like, you know, mixing your goals here. I think I came to terms with it that it helps these companies get to scale and come down the cost curve, right? It's a means to an end. Is that how you're seeing it as well?
Exactly. I think that's how we have to see it at this point. You're absolutely right. Just burning natural gas. I mean, what carbon engineering is doing is the emissions that are released from burning the natural gas are also captured, right? So looking at the whole solution, it is actually the 1 million ton is CO2 that is being removed from the atmosphere, right? And then there is the CO2 that is also captured that comes from burning the natural gas. And you're right. I would say that for enhanced recovery purposes, this is helpful now to help the technology scale, drive down cost. But in the longer term, we will need direct air capture for a purpose that the main goal is to remove emissions from the atmosphere, not to keep pumping more oil.
Cool. Okay, that makes sense. And so who are the main drivers behind this? Like, right, so there's startups, you know, that are involved in doing it, but who are the drivers that are saying they want to buy it, you know, that are interested in it, besides those that are looking to use the downstream CO2?
There is the big thing, the offsetting there, right? So we are seeing companies that are really interested in direct air capture because of the offsetting potential. So companies that not only want to remove the emissions that they are currently releasing in a per year basis, but also that they want to remove emissions that they released in the past, such as the case of Microsoft, for example. So Microsoft is investing in Climeworks as part of their 2030 portfolio for removal technologies. So there is really a focus of companies that really want to offset their emissions in a easy to monitor way and verifiable way that are looking into direct air capture.
Well, that's cool. Are we seeing others besides Microsoft that are jumping in this early?
There are other so there are online web pages that are partnering with Climeworks and Carbon Engineering as well. So there are companies that are interested in these direct air capture approaches. But the biggest announcement probably was the one from Microsoft towards Climeworks.
Okay, so a couple more questions. Let's talk about what the future looks like if this goes, right? It would seem to me that you would want to put these facilities in places that are really close to storage locations. Is that right? Is that what we're starting to see? You know, besides enhanced oil recovery, you'd put it in places where you can inject the CO2. Is that correct?
That's correct. For example, in the facility that Climeworks is building next to the storage site, but also the one that they are building for liquid fuels production next to the facility that will produce the liquid fuels. So we don't have the transport cost there.
Right. Okay, cool. And so like we can start to predict like where these facilities might be. And it sounds from what you're saying, they could be modular too. So they could just make them bigger and bigger and bigger as you go. Is that right?
That's right. And that's what we are seeing from companies. So all these companies, They say that their technology is very, very modular. So scaling their facilities is relatively easy. Scaling their capacity is easy because they just need to build more modules and place them next to each other. So you could basically deploy your director capture plan where you want and also scale as you want as well.
And I guess on one more thing on location, where's China in all this?
At the moment, there are no really big main players working on direct air capture in China, but of course that's the focus that the industry will look at, and I'm sure that this will be the point that we will hear a lot talk about in the future.
That's one way you could come down the cost curve, right? Is that China jumps in and starts building these things like crazy.
Absolutely, absolutely. The main thing there as well is just taking advantage of the incentives available, right? If companies don't see incentives in China, then they'll go to the US, for example, to take advantage of the 45Q, which is what we mentioned, or the low carbon fuel standard to produce liquid fuels, for example.
Is there government support anywhere besides the 45Q tax credit? When CCS was making a lot of headlines, a decade ago, there was billions in government support for pilot projects. Is that looking to be the case here as well?
There has been government funding in the UK, for example, in the US as well, for the deployment of direct air capture technologies. There is also this 100 million, fund or challenge that Elon Musk has done, which is kind of massive as well. But these companies have raised significant funding, right? So what they need at the moment is large amount of money, talking the order of billions, to scale their technology.
Okay, so it doesn't seem like there's huge money from governments going into pilots or demo projects, but can you also describe this? Is it a prize from Elon Musk, or what is that?
That is actually a prize from Elon Musk that was announced this year, but that's for different renewable technologies. But it will be very cool in order to see the role that direct air capture plays there, because other renewable technologies can play a role through ocean mineralization, etc. So it's not only focused on direct air capture, but it will be cool to see the role that tag plays, given how much focus and how much attention the industry currently has.
One final question. So what is the next step in our research in this area? Are we going to keep going with direct air capture? Is there do you have a pipeline of research that questions you want to look at, or what are we seeing?
I personally think that the next thing to look at is to see the progress that these companies are doing in their announcements. So really seeing whether these plants are being commissioned, construction has started, how the utilization market evolves as well, right? So Climeworks, for example, that is doing the CO2 to fuels facility, how all these markets that are focused in utilization and that can bring new revenue streams evolve. So that's a big part. And also making progress on driving down the cost, learning from operating the facilities, driving down CapEx as well. So the focus is really understanding how we can drive down cost and then understanding the role that the utilization market will have in the overall deployment of direct air capture.
David, thanks for joining.
Thank you, Mark.
This week's show was produced by Ava Gonzalez Isla and edited by Rex Warner of Greystoke Media. Bloomberg NEF is a service provided by Bloomberg Finance LP and its affiliates. This recording does not constitute, nor should it be construed as, investment advice, investment recommendations, or a recommendation as to an investment or other strategy. Bloomberg NEF should not be considered as information sufficient upon which to base an investment decision. Neither Bloomberg Finance LP nor any of its affiliates makes any representation or warranty as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this recording, and any liability as a result of this recording is expressly